ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 4. It's also 5, they're combined together. Tatra panita balayo Raber deepam ivadrita Atmaramam purnakamam Nijalabdhena nityada Tatropanita balayo Raver deepam ivadrita Atmaramam purnakamam Nijalabdhena nityada Tatra, thereupon, Upanita, having offered, Balayaha, presentations, Ravehe, up to the sun, Deepam, lamp, Iva, like, Adritaha, being evaluated. Atma-aramam. Unto the self-sufficient. Purnakamam. Fully satisfied. Nijalabdhena. By his own potencies. Nityada. One who supplies incessantly. And there's another part. Piti utpala mukha prochur harsha gadgadaya gira pitaram sarva suhridam ivataram ivarbakaha. The translation. The citizens, this is Krishna's entering Dwarka, receiving him. The citizens are receiving him. The citizens arrive before the Lord with their respective presentations, offering them to the fully satisfied and self-sufficient one, who by his own potency incessantly supplies others. These presentations were like the offering of a lamp to the sun. Yet, the citizens began to speak in ecstatic language to receive the Lord, just as a ward welcomes their guardian and father. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord Krishna is described herein as Atma Rama. He is self-sufficient, and there is no need for him to seek happiness from anything beyond himself. He is self-sufficient because his very transcendental existence is transcendental bliss. He is eternally existent. He is all cognizant and all blissful. Therefore, any presentation, however valuable it may be, is not needed by him. But still, because he is the well-wisher for one and all, he accepts from everyone, everything that is offered to him in pure devotional service. It is not that he is in want for such things, because the things are themselves generated from his energy. The comparison is made herein that making offerings to the Lord is something like offering a lamp in the worship of the sun god. Anything fiery and illuminating is but an emanation of the energy of the sun, and yet to worship the sun god, it is necessary to offer him a lamp. In the worship of the sun, there is some sort of demand made by the worshiper. But in the case of devotional service, there is no question of demand from either side. It is all the sign of pure love and affection between the Lord and the devotee. Paragraph. The Lord is the Supreme Father of all living beings, and therefore those who are conscious of this vital relation with God can make filial demands from the Father, and the Father is pleased to supply the demands of such obedient sons without bargaining. The Lord is just like a desire tree, and from him everyone can have everything by the causeless mercy of the Lord. As the Supreme Father, the Lord, however, does not supply to a pure devotee what is considered to be a barrier to the discharge of devotional service. Last sentence. Those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord can rise to the position of unalloyed devotional service by his transcendental attraction. So Sutta Goswami doesn't waste time. He's getting right down to business here. First canto already is describing the moods of meeting and separation, because the previous chapter 10, Krishna's leaving. Actually, before chapter 10, Krishna tries to leave and he stopped. Krishna left Dwaraka to go to Hastinapur to support the Pandavas and even to see if there could be no battle, and he went as a messenger, as their messenger. There must be battle. Duryodhana was determined. So now the battle's over and Yudhisthira is the king, the funeral is done, everything's, his reason for coming is over, so he tries to go. And Uttara comes running through the crowd and stops him. That passage is completed. Kunti comes and stands before Krishna and pleads with Krishna not to go. Krishna smiles and he starts to get in his chariot. Yudhisthira comes. Please don't go. They don't want him to go. So Krishna agrees. And he stays for several months. Yudhisthira is very powerful. Krishna stayed for several months. It's described he stayed for two reasons. To pacify Yudhisthira, because he was feeling too much grief, as considering himself to be the cause of so many deaths, just for my sake, horrible. And the other was Subhadra, Krishna's sister. His sister had lost her only son, Abhimanyu, and the grandson was yet to be born, so Krishna remained. Then Grandfather Bhishma pacifies Yudhisthira. He instructs Yudhisthira. Grandfather Bhishma passes, chapter 9. Yudhisthira starts to rule, chapter 10, and as he starts to rule, everything is going abundantly well, because he's the quality king, pure devotee, perfect example, all citizens follow, everything is very nice. But even when everything is very nice, there's always a but. Krishna wants to leave now. So the whole scene of chapter 10 is the etiquettes of how a junior, senior, and equal, and how different persons honor another. But the deeper message is the feelings of separation. Viraha is the term that's used in the chapter. Feelings of separation. And some very, very beautiful prayers by the ladies of Hastinapur as they're standing on the rooftops talking with one another, not just some idle talk, but very, very wonderful prayers glorifying Krishna and appreciating how fortunate are the residents of Dwaraka, because they're in constant, except when he's away, they're in constant association with Krishna, receiving his glances and seeing his smile and hearing his talks and serving him in so many ways. And the queens, oh, how fortunate are the queens, and the sons of the queens, and the sons of the sons of the queens, and how fortunate, how they're bubbling over with appreciation. And so chapter 11 is Krishna's entering Dwaraka, so it's meeting Sambhog. And with that meeting, wonderful feelings. The unhappiness, in fact, deep, deep, deep sorrow at Krishna having been away is dissipated. So those two things at the same time, the unhappiness of separation and the like coming alive from a dead position or awakening from a deep sleep and resuming one's natural activity. Or the dark winter again coming alive in spring. It's just very, very joyful. And Krishna blows upon his conch shell to announce that he's coming. Very poetic language, how the conch shell is white, but by the touch with Krishna it becomes reddish. And Prabhupada explains that even ordinary things, when in contact with the Supreme Lord, become spiritualized. In fact, the Lord is everywhere. And so when he manifests himself, although he's everywhere as Brahman, he's everywhere as Paramatma, he's everywhere as his energy, but sometimes we don't see him. But when we can see him, then he's spiritual, that presence, that manifesting his presence spiritualizes everything. So the citizens of Dwaraka heard the sound of Krishna's conch and they ran. And those that didn't run, they were making preparations to receive Krishna, just to serve him. So now this verse, they had presentations. The citizens arrived before the Lord with their respective presentations. That's this balaya. They were carrying in their hands various presentations to offer deepam, like a lamp, unto Ravi, the sun. Big deal. offering the lamb to the sun. Thanks a lot. Or it's likened to offering the lamb to the sun. Because why? Atmaramam Purna Kamam. Krishna is self-sufficient. Atmaramam. Self-sufficient. He's satisfied fully within himself. There's nothing wanting, like it's described in Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says about himself, there's nothing I have to do. And the understanding is people have things to do because they need something. You know, like, I'm thirsty, so I go get a glass of water. Or I'm hungry, so I go get something to eat. Or I need to pay my electric bill, so I go to work. Or something. I need to do, and therefore I do something. But Krishna doesn't need anything. There isn't another person like that, except for those that are fully absorbed in Krishna. Then they also become Atmarama. But unless fully absorbed in Krishna, we're always wanting something, because we're so tiny and we're insufficient. But Krishna is self-sufficient. There isn't something that he needs. Because everything is within him. Like that very nice prayer of the very last one that Brahma offered to Krishna. He said, is there anything that is not resting within your abdomen? Because everything that comes into existence, it comes from the body of Mahavishnu. All the universes passing through the pores of his skin like particles of dust through a screen in the window, they may pass. Whereas I'm living in one of those universes that's covered and it's dark and just surrounded by five elements. And you, everything is coming from you. So, what does Krishna need? He's Atmarama. Purna Kamam means Purna Kamam. All desires are fulfilled by him within him. So there's no requirement. Nijalabdena. By his own potencies, Nitya Da. Nitya means eternal and Da means to give. He's eternally supplying everybody with his own potencies. Just as the same word Nitya Da is found in the second chapter of this first canto, where Sutta is, it's a summary verse. Sutta has described the process of devotional service, and he says, therefore, tasmat, ekena manasa, bhagavan, satvatam patihi. One should fix one's mind. So, Krishna's teaching that in Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavatam is explaining it. The citizens of Dwaraka, they're there. They're not like practicing. They're, it's described previously, they're on the platform of spontaneous devotional service. Like, we have regulative devotional service where, you know, we're to rise early and at a certain time perform Mangalarti in a certain way, and then after Mangalarti approach the deity and worship the deity in a certain way by regulation. And then after the worship of the deity, make an offering to the deity, and after the offering of the deity, an arti for the deity, and there's procedures, step by step, and we're to follow those procedures as regulative devotional service. Prabhupada would sometimes describe these things in a very liberal way, but he would say that when one by that regulative devotional service, that stage will come when we're meditating on how we'd like to dress the deity and what offerings we'd like to make the deity and have a nice festival for the deity and how we'll make decorations and do clothing. And the mind goes into the anticipation, eager anticipation of serving, not just because it's regulative, we're supposed to do it. Or like the phrase that we use, completing our rounds or finishing our rounds, as opposed to eagerly looking forward to chant our rounds. We had an abbreviated form of a japa retreat in Sharanagati, and one of the devotees attending during the sharing time at the end, he said, it was very nice, said, when I joined the Hare Krishna movement about 18 years ago, I did because I liked chanting. And I wanted to join the Hare Krishna movement because then I could chant with the devotees. It was even nicer to chant with the devotees. And I was very happy chanting Hare Krishna with the devotees. And then came book distribution. Okay, so we added book distribution to chanting. And then just over a period of time, it became chanting was a way to fix your consciousness so you could have a nice day in book distribution. And if you'd had a bad day in book distribution, the next day was so you could get ready for another challenge and a difficult day. And then the book distribution kind of moved into paraphernalia, and then paraphernalia moved into paintings, and then it was, you know, the chanting was to fix your day so you could do your service. And it just went on for years. I just kind of like got habituated to it. Just chanting is to fix your day so you can do your service. But I feel like a new devotee again. It was very nice. So I was chanting just because I want to chant. And I was chanting with devotees that want to chant. And I felt like a new devotee all over again. That was very nice. Very nice to chant because you want to chant. You want to associate with Krishna through His holy name. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha dhyaya pujas cha nityada. Shrotavya kirtitavyascha dhyaya pujas cha nityada. This is describing how one should fix one's mind upon Krishna in ekena manasa, one pointed way, by Shrotavya, by hearing, Kirtavya, by chanting, Dhyaya, by remembering, Puja, by worship, Cha Nityada. In this case, Nityada indicates doing so regularly. Those things that we do, we should do so Nitya. That's like a gentle. Nitya means eternally, but regularly. So here, Nityada is describing Krishna. Because He's Nityada. He's always giving His Nijalabdhena, his by His own potency, He's giving everything that everybody needs. Prabhupada really liked to quote the verse where it's described that there's Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovidadati Kama. There's one, Eka Bahunam, many. There's one who's in relation to the many, is providing everything that the many need. So the verse actually gives the purport. Not even the verse. It gives the example of the father. The father likes to supply for the children. It's what fathers are supposed to do, but fathers that are loving fathers, they like to do. They like to give to their children. The children don't have to come and ask, you know, some obvious thing. Will you feed us tonight? Is it okay? Please. Can I have a jacket? It's cold out. The loving father likes to supply. And the loving child making an offering to the loving father, what does the loving father need from whatever it is that, like Prabhupada uses the phrase, the 2 cent lozenge? The son may offer to the father a 2 cent lozenge, and it's not a big deal from monetary means, but it's the offering of love. That's the big deal. And so what the citizens of Dwarka are doing, Dwarka is not only is as opulent as the spiritual world, it is the spiritual world. It's the abode of the Lord, because when the Lord descends, he descends with his abode. And the spiritual opulence of Vaikuntha is manifest in its fullness in Dwarka. So it's opulence and opulence and opulence and opulence. And so they're taking one little piece of that opulence and offering it to Krishna, who is the source of all opulence. His mind isn't attracted to the opulence. It's his own opulence. He's attracted to the feelings of love of the devotees of Dwarka. So, in the purport, Prabhupada describes that in the case of the worshippers of the sun, it's the same. They're offering a lamp unto the sun. But when they're offering the lamp unto the sun, they want something. Just like Satrajit. He was really into worshiping the sun. Hours every day he would worship the sun. He would offer a lamp to the sun, and he would chant mantras in glorification of Surya Dev, and he would make valuable presentations unto the sun. And he did this every day, every day, every day. But he had some very strong desires. So, the way the Bhagavatam describes it, one day Surya Dev felt very pleased, and so he came before Satrajit and offered him something that had never before even been seen in this world. A dazzling jewel that was as brilliant as the sun. And it offered benedictions. One who worships that jewel, people worship something valuable. One who worships this jewel will have no bad health, will have no irregularity of weather, and in that place where they do that worship, and 170 pounds of gold every day. Satrajit was very happy. Oh, Surya Dev, you read my mind. How did you know? Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. So Prabhupada's point here is one who worships the sun or worships the devas, they do so generally, because there are exceptions. When pure devotees approach them, there's an exception, but when they want something. We had this discussion the other day. When Krishna went into the cave of Jambavan to retrieve the Shamataka jewel, and he told the elders of Dwarka that were with him, just wait here, I'll come. Be patient, I'll come. 12 days and 12 nights passed, and Krishna didn't come. So they were very discouraged. They went back to Dwarka to tell Ugrasena all that had happened. Meanwhile, the fighting with Jambavan continued for 28 days. And by that time, the citizens of Dwarka were feeling when Krishna had gone to Hastinapur. They were feeling great separation, more than separation. They were concerned for his safety and his well-being. So what did they do? They went to the temple of Goddess Durga. Yes. And they worshipped Goddess Durga, but not for something material. They worshipped Goddess Durga that may Krishna come back safely. And as soon as they finished their worship, Goddess Durga spoke to them and said, very soon Krishna will come. And just then Krishna came. Not only he came with the Shyamantaka jewel. And not only with the Shyamantaka jewel, with another wife. Jambavati. But the commentary explains that when they were worshipping Goddess Durga, it's not the external energy Goddess Durga, who is the in charge of the material world, but the internal potency, because as you recall, Yoga Maya, who was summoned by Krishna to transfer Balaram from the womb of Devaki to the womb of Rohini and later take birth as the child of Yashoda, later was transformed in the presence of you-know-who. Hamsa! Into Durga. But as far as Krishna is concerned, that's Yogamaya. The material energy is but a reflection of the spiritual energy, so the residents of Dwarka were not worshipping the Durga that, you know, Kamsa saw and was afraid of and then went to make his apology. Gee, Devaki, I'm sorry, I just killed six of your children. I hope it's okay. You know, it's destiny. It's just one of those things. I sure you don't mind. You forgive me, right? Or the gopis. They worshipped Goddess Katyayani, to have Krishna as their husband. And same, the acharyas describe with detail. Using Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's language, there's the prototype, and then there's the expansion of the prototype. It's like a dictionary kind of a definition of the original, of the spiritual form, because the gopis don't have any material desire. It's like Brahma, those nice prayers last night. Brahma was saying, my mind is free from attraction of anything material, but I still can't understand you. You're fathomless, because the realm of spirit is unlimited and my mind does not have such a capacity. My mind is limited and you're unlimited. So the idea here is in the realm of devotional service, then Prabhupada ramps it up at the end of the purport, but in the realm of devotional service, there's no question of demand from either side. That's in the realm of devotional service. So from either side, Krishna, it seems like Krishna makes a demand. In fact, some people say, oh, what's his problem? Sarva-dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. And then, aham tvam sarva-papebhyo. You do this and I'll do that. Sounds like a demand. Surrender unto me, otherwise suffer. And people ask that question. No, Swamiji, why is Krishna doing like this? He could just make everybody free. But he says, you have to surrender to me first. What's the deal here? It's not a demand. It's not like, I won't like you unless you do this. But rather, it's out of love for the living entity. It's an expression of his love only, that this is your happiness. Please take your happiness. But the material calculation is happiness is, I have independence like Krishna has, but that's not who we are. That's not who we are. So that's not our happiness. It's illusion. And give up your illusion, Krishna's inviting. Give up your illusion. And what is it that you have to offer? You have to offer only that which I've given you. That's what you have to offer, the lamp under the sun. Or his unlimited potencies, some little piece of his unlimited potencies back to the original potent. It's just, you know, please engage in a loving exchange, in other words. But the expression of that loving exchange from our side is that we surrender to Krishna. There was a man, kind of older person, that was visiting in Detroit, just in Detroit before coming here. And he was saying, I just want to surrender to Krishna. And I thought, you know, what does he understand about surrendering unto Krishna? And maybe I was right. But he was saying, I came 5 years ago, 6 years ago, and I made some effort, but I got pulled away, and I just want to surrender unto Krishna. It was largely sentiment, because he really doesn't understand who is Krishna, what surrender to Krishna means. But there was something after further discussion. What he meant was like what's being described here. It's just, I want that loving relationship. And if the price of that loving relationship looks like a high price, I'm ready to pay. That's what he meant. Because that's what surrender may look like, a high price. But surrender is just like giving up our suffering and taking up our happiness. That's all. Because Krishna's Atmaram. He doesn't need something. It's not like he's stamping his foot and saying, here's the line. It's not like that. It's an expression of his love. And from the side of the devotee, when it's in the realm of devotional service, it's not an exchange, it's an offering of service. In contrast to the worship of the sun, where in general it's, I want something. In the realm of devotional service, it's still like offering a lamp to the sun, but it's, what makes it devotional service is, at least the intention that I wish simply to serve you. I want to chant your name just to chant your name. To glorify you and please you and restore our loving relationship. So, the last paragraph is also very nice in the purport. He uses the expression Father with a capital F, Supreme Father and Father and so, Lord. Master, that because it's in the purport, or it's in the verse rather, when it's not in the board, Pitaram Sarva Suhridam, he's the father and well-wishing friend of all. So, Prabhupada writes, the Lord is the supreme father, in caps, of all living beings, and therefore those who are conscious of this vital relation, vital, he puts in italics, vital relation, can make filial demands. The I want, think of the father, the son's asking of the father. But it's, if so, there's one way that it's just I want, and the other way it's a loving an exchange of loving service, because it's like Arjuna saying, please draw my chariot into the middle of the two armies. Like that. It's because it's just a loving reciprocation. It's not, I enjoy riding in the back of the chariot while Krishna is the driver. It's a loving, it's a matter of, in the realm of devotional service, those who are conscious of the vital, in italics, relation, they may make some filial demands, and Krishna is very happy to supply them. But it's not demand and order and supply. It's not that. It's an exchange of loving dealing. Then another italic-sized word. The Lord is just like the desire tree. In italics. Desire tree. A desire tree. Like the word in the verse. Nijalabdhena. Which is by his own potencies. Nijalabdhena. So he's the desire tree. And we have a relationship with the desire tree. And what does the desire tree like to do? The desire tree likes to fulfill the desires. What do fathers like to do? They like to provide things for their children. They like to do that. It's not resentful. Oh, I have another day. I have to supply things to my children. Yuck. It's part of a father's loving mood. It's part of Krishna's loving mood. Especially when the mood of one who is approaching him is in a loving mood. And from him everyone can have everything by the causeless mercy of the Lord. Two more sentences. As the Supreme Father, the Lord, however, does not supply to a pure devotee what is considered to be a barrier to the discharge of devotional service. Turn it around, and he supplies that which is going to enhance his devotional service. Not even just like a facility. We can get a facility for devotional service and get all, you know, possessed of how important that facility is rather than the service. So there may be some dry spots. Just like in chanting, there may be, you know, some period where we're chanting and it's like Arizona, it's dry. Because our attention may not be in the right place. You know, why doesn't Krishna just, like, you know, irrigate this place? It's all dry. Our regard for him may not be proper, and so he wants our regard for him to be proper. So we go on chanting because it's part of our relationship with Krishna that we chant his name, expecting his mercy. Then the last sentence, those who are engaged in devotional service of the Lord can rise to the position of unalloyed devotional service by his transcendental attraction. What a way to finish the paragraph, finish the purport. Krishna means he attracts. Krish, the syllable Krish means to attract. And he's all attractive. So we can't get to that very nice position that's described, where there's no want from our side, only what Krishna wants. On our own effort, we can't get there, but by Krishna's transcendental attraction, we can. Hey, we're dependent. But that's nice. And let us be fully dependent. And that surrender. And when that surrender is there, the fullness of what Krishna has to offer, his transcendental attraction, his mercy. In Bhaktivinoda Thakura's language, there's three things. This is from the Japa retreat message, but he describes there are three, kind of like stages in chanting, or three things that we can do to help our chanting. And this is the third one. The third one is recognize while chanting, Krishna is manifesting his mercy. Of course, that requires the first two things before we're going to realize that third one. We can, you know, have that idea in our mind, but not necessarily experience it. But the first two, one of them is, it's the same as what Sanatana Goswami describes, that is, while chanting, absorb the mind in the meaning of the mantra. And he recommends to absorb the mind in the meaning of the mantra is to call out, Krishna, please accept me. The mind absorbed in the mantra, and then the heart absorbed in the mantra is next. Call out with feeling. And then receive mercy. So I'll just read the sentence again and we'll end. Prabhupada writes, those who are engaged in the devotional service of the Lord can rise to the position of unalloyed devotional service by his transcendental attraction. These descriptions of Krishna entering into Dwaraka, that's what's supposed to happen. The intention of Vyasadeva is to attract us to Krishna as these residents of Dwaraka are attracted to Krishna through their spontaneous devotion to attract our hearts in the same way to Krishna. Okay, so any discussion? Yes?
Maharaj, I understand that the pure devotional services are desires only what Krishna desires. But I have material desires, and you know, most of them are not very gross, but you know, more subtle in terms of relationships. So I, you know, the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam has a verse, Sarvakama Vishnu, Yogina. So I find myself approaching the deity, and I'll, you know, express the deity. I understand as a material desire, and here it is, and please fulfill it. And I also, at the same time, make a prayer to the deity that I understand, you know, that I want to get rid of this desire. That is the position of purity.
That's another way it says, please take it away. Do you say that one too? Please fulfill it, please take it away.
And
Krishna says, well, make up your mind, what do you want?
I'm only sincere about the part, please give it to me. You know, the desire of please take it away is just totally, you know, lip service. Yeah, I don't mean it. So what to do, Maharaj?
What to do? The idea of sarvakama is that Krishna is all pure, there's two things. Krishna is all pure, and so by contact, by going to Krishna, the all pure, one's heart will become pure. It's not a bait and switch, it's not a trick. It's explicit. Krishna is all pure. And by going to Krishna, one's heart will become pure. And in the fifth canto, and there's a chapter, Prayers by the Residents of Jambudvipa, one of the glorifications they make of, it's prayers to various personalities. And when they get to Krishna, they say, he's the best. Here's why he's the best. When people pray to Krishna for something, he doesn't give them that something, as we heard here. If it's going to implicate them more in the material energy, but if he does fulfill that desire, he does it in such a way they never have that desire again. Because he gives them his two lotus feet. And so, just like Dhruva Maharaj, he got what he wanted. But when he got what he wanted, he was crying. I don't want it. What a fool. And it's not like Krishna said, well, that's too bad. You know, you wanted it, so you got to take it. But now, when he got it, it was without the desire, without the material portion of that desire. It was, I want a kingdom. So he arranged a kingdom for him. Not only he arranged a kingdom for him, but, you know, he instructed Dhruva, you ruled your father's kingdom for 60,000 years. And Dhruva was thinking, I could be with him? But I've got to be here for 60,000 lousy years. And then the Lord left, and he was crying. Why did I have this? So, Krishna's very expert. He either A or B. He doesn't fulfill that desire, as stated here, because it's not... If, because it may be advantageous for one's devotional service that some desire is fulfilled. But he transforms that desire, not in one way, it's not a cookie cutter way, it's in such a way that there's no material desire left. The parents of Srinivas Acharya were pure devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they were so absorbed in their pure devotion to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that it just didn't come into their mind to have a child. But at a certain point in time, when Mahaprabhu was in Puri, skipping lots of nice other things, both the husband and wife had this desire to have a child. And they spoke with each other about it and said, this has never been there before, but it's there. We should go find out from Lord Chaitanya, what's this all about? So they went to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And before they even spoke, he said, you go to see Lord Jagannath and pray to him, and he will fulfill your desire. And they had gone to see Jagannath. While they were gone to see Jagannath, Lord Chaitanya said to Govinda, his servant, they will have a child very soon, that will be the manifestation of the fullness of my compassion. And his name will be Srinivas. That was like, even if they, while they were still in the temple room praying. So, Srinivas was famous even before he was conceived. What to speak of born, what to speak of he did what he did. A fullness of Lord Chaitanya's compassion, and he's Mahavaranyaya. So, if one has a desire, try to make that desire that which will be pleasing to Krishna. That's Bhaktisiddhanta calls that dovetail. That which will be pleasing to Krishna. So like, you know, you like to work with children. You like children, so Krishna is fulfilling that desire. But it's being fulfilled in such a way, the material portion, at least the opportunity is being provided so the material portion can be removed. And it's just serving. Just serving. Not enjoying, but just serving. The opportunity Krishna provides like that. In that way, so it's either the material portion is, because Krishna is pure, the material portion is removed, or the desire is not fulfilled. And that's, you know, what to do is you become very ardent worshipper of Krishna. He'll help you. He's the Supreme Pure. Anything else? See if there's anybody else? Rupa? No.
Maharaj, the Lord is like a desire tree, and we also create that Vaishnavas are like a desire tree, fulfilling desires of everyone.
Uh-huh.
So I can understand that in relation to, you know, the pure devotee and but we also offer this prayer when we offer obeisances to our peers.
Sure, they're conduits of Krishna's mercy. That's what devotees are. That's what a devotee is. That's what, you know, at least what we're supposed to be. And if we're devotees, that's what we are. Through the medium of Krishna's devotees, the devotees deliver Krishna's mercy. The other kind. In the spiritual, Prabhupada describes the desire trees can produce unlimited varieties of fruit of any type at any time. So like he gives, you know, there's a mango tree or a banana tree or an apple tree, and it's only one fruit and only in season. And the desire trees, any kind of fruit at any amount, all year round. No in season, out of season. But then those fruits are not like these fruits. It's not so that my tongue can enjoy this flavor, that taste, this texture. It's not like that. Another one. Okay.
I've been studying Ishwara Upanishad, and I'm trying to understand the last few verses where the devotee prays, please remember the sacrifices that I've done for you.
Just in case you forgot.
In terms of, you know, what we were saying, that we're offering a lamb to the sun. So what is the big deal?
That's the idea. That's the idea. It's not like he's forgetful and you got to remind him because, you know, his mind is distracted by other things. It's an offering. That's all. It's an offering. What are our austerities unto the Supreme Lord? But it's my offering. That's what the meaning of it is. It's more for the benefit of the individual. that these austerities I've done are for you. It's reminding ourselves it's for our benefit. Yeah. Those teachings of Ishvapanishad, it's for us. And so the person who's speaking like that is speaking to teach us how we can speak, and how we can speak is make it whatever it is, like Yad Karoshi, Yad Asnasi, Yad Jahosi, Tadasi, Yad Yad Tapasyasi Kaunteya. So it's, this is how you do it. This is for you. Whatever austerities, because many cases, or even most cases, austerity is for me. I'm forgoing something because I want another something. I want some power, I want some something, I want something. It's for you. Like in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the Brahmana who came to Prayag and was worshipping, had a big festival for his Shalagram Shila, the very elaborate whole chapter describing what he did, and at the end he stood before the deity and said, if there's any merit that has come to me from this sacrifice, I offer it to you. Like that. Pure devotion. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Yeah.